I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's America's 250th birthday, and I'm going to shop the furniture America's waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, they've got ultra-comfy power reclining sofas with genuine leather seats, stylish dining sets with convenient lift-top storage, best-selling bedrooms with over 700 five-star reviews, and a feature-packed pop-up sleeper sofa with built-in shelving, charging, storage, and those signature Bob-opedic seats. So, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled BABBEL.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Welcome, welcome, and welcome to a brand spanking new edition of the Salvaged Series Rico Bronya. I'm your host, Evan Roberts. The Mets lost 2 out of 3 to the Cincinnati Reds. That sucks. They were pretty much non-competitive in the first two games of this series. That sucked. They officially lost the tiebreaker to the Cincinnati Reds. If you actually think that a tiebreaker between the Mets and Reds will be relevant for the second straight year, that sucked. But luckily, the Mets avoided disaster by winning the final game of this three-game series. And there are some minor positives we can take with us as they begin a very odd three-game series in Philadelphia against the Phillies that features a game Thursday and off day Friday, and then prime time games on Saturday night and Sunday night. Let me start with game two of this series. If you want a recap of game one, go back one previous episode to episode 707. We actually did an instant reaction to the horror show that was the opener of this series. And in a weird way, even though 12-0 is far different than 5-2, game two of this series followed a very similar script. It followed the script of a Mets starting pitcher. In game one, it was Tobias Myers as an opener. And in game two, it was our old friend Kodai Senga delivered what was an uncompetitive beginning to a game. The first inning for Kodai Senga on Tuesday night was like the reoccurring nightmare that you had hoped would be gone. Now, if we're being honest with ourselves, and I've been a pretty positive Senga guy, so when Kodai Senga's lost me, It's like when you lose Cronkite, you lose America. When Senga loses the humble host of the Rico Bronya, you know Kodai has lost all faith, or he has no one who has faith in him. But he made this start on Tuesday because of desperation. It's not like on his rehab assignment, Kodai Senga looked dominant. And remember, this start that he made on Tuesday occurred on quote-unquote regular rest, the thing that the Mets have spent years avoiding asking Kodai Senga to do. So the fact that he was making a start on quote-unquote regular rest as his first start back after missing a few months, that tells you that the Mets did not call Kodai because they thought he was ready. They didn't call Kodai because they liked the way his ghost fork looked in the minor leagues. They didn't call Kodai because his command looked awesome. They called him because they had no other option. They used Tobias Myers as an opener on Monday. They used David Peterson in the course of that blowout. They don't have faith in bringing back guys like Jonah Tong and Zach Thornton. They don't think Jack Weininger is ready. So when you add it all up, Kodai Senga pitched on Tuesday because they needed him to pitch on Tuesday. And that first inning was probably just as bad as you could have imagined. And you could tell he was in trouble in that first at-bat against Blake Dunn. The count was 3-2. And I said out loud, I don't think I actually said it out loud. I said it to myself, talking to myself these days. I said to myself, he has to get Blake Dunn out. If he puts Blake Dunn on, this inning is going to turn into a disaster. And in this case, it's not normally the case, but in this case, I was very right because he walks Dunn. He walks J.J. Bleda on five pitches. He has absolutely no command of his ghost fork. And then he falls behind Sal Stewart and gets absolutely crushed for a bomb of a three-run home run. And I can't be alone that when Sal Stewart hit that three-run home run, and it was a no doubt about it, I actually started laughing. I was chuckling. I think we've entered that part of the Mets season where you may as well laugh. You may as well chuckle it up. And I admit, because I always want to be honest, as a sports fan, I'm probably in the worst place I've ever been. Incredibly jealous of what the Knicks have accomplished. Looking at my basketball team, not knowing what they're doing, never having faith in my football team. And obviously, this is the Rico. Y'all know this Mets season's been disastrous. So when Senga gives up the three-run home run in the first inning, on the heels of losing 12-0 the day before, if you don't laugh, you're just shutting the TV off. Those are your two options. You can laugh, which I decided to do, or you could say, I'm shutting this crap off. And honestly, Senga was lucky that it didn't get worse because the next hitter, Nathaniel Lowe, hit a ball to left center field and A.J. Ewing made a great diving play. Something we saw a lot of in this series. If there are positives to take, and there are a few that we'll get to throughout this episode of the Rico, one of which is A.J. Ewing's defense in center field. You know, I remember Juan Lagares for all those years, and Juan was a joy to watch defensively, but he couldn't hit. And so was more of a fourth outfielder than anything else. A.J. Ewing obviously has a chance to be a table setter, has a chance to be an impact player on this team. A lot of work to do, a long way to go, but he's got that potential. And I don't think he's necessarily Lagares defensively in center, but he's very good. He makes up a ton of ground with his speed. He made a few diving catches in this series, some clutch diving catches in this series. He's got a really good arm. At least defensively, they have a center fielder. And what's cool about that is even if he's a disappointment offensively, and I'm not suggesting he's going to be, I'm complimenting him. This is a weird way for me to get to a compliment. But even if A.J. Ewing isn't the plus offensive player he's expected to be, he's so good defensively, I think he's an everyday major leaguer. You know, Juan Lagares didn't hit enough. I think even at A.J. Ewing's worst case scenario, he's probably hitting a little bit more than Juan Lagares. But he makes that great play. And if he doesn't, it would have been four consecutive batters reaching against Senga in the first inning. The home run to Spencer Steer did feel like some bad luck. It was a fly ball to center field that just kept carrying and carrying and carrying. But I'm sorry. Four runs in the first inning. Four runs in the first inning for an offense that the day before left Norway on base. That's a bad way to start. Now, I am going to be I don't know. Nice. Is that the right word? I like to say honest. I don't think I'm nice. I don't think I'm mean. I think I'm honest. I think that Senga settling down was a huge plus. Now, that doesn't mean I trust him. That doesn't mean this is something I think he can carry into his next start, because Carlos Mendoza did say he is going to get another start Monday at Citi Field against the Cubs. But in that first inning, when Senga throws 36 pitches and allows four runs, and you have a bullpen that is not equipped to find a way to get 21 more outs, let alone 24 more outs, because that would mean you took the lead, I didn't think Senga was going to go deep into this game. Four innings isn't deep, but the fact he was able to twirl three scoreless innings after that disaster in the first is what I like to call a miney, a teeny weeny minier positive. It's tiny. It's very small, but it's a positive, because this game could have gotten uglier than it was. It was 4-0. Senga settled down. He gave the offense a chance to come back into this game. And ultimately, the Mets lost the game 5-3. So after the four runs in the first inning, Met pitching went out and gave up one run over the next seven innings. So minor credit to Senga. And even in the three scoreless innings, he was not dominant. He did not have great command of his ghost fork at all. He falls way too much in love with his cutter. It wasn't great. Like, it wasn't three really impressive innings. I'm more talking about in the context of this game, he was at least able to get nine more outs, keep it at 4-0, and allow this offense an opportunity. The problem with this offense in game two, obviously game three would be far different, but in game two is that they did a good job of giving themselves opportunities like we saw in game one, where they had the bases loaded numerous times. But go to the third inning of this game, down 4-0. You get two on and one out for the top of the order. And outside of a Bo Bichette RBI single, and boy, you can't get him out, Juan Soto draws a walk, and you get yet another bases loaded spot. And Jared Young takes the turn of not coming through. They get bases loaded again in the fourth inning on a Ewing walk and a Beatty hit batsman and an Alvarez walk, which was a really good at-bat. And now it's Carson Benz time to come up small with the bases loaded. It was actually insanity when you think about what happened in game one with all the opportunities they had with the bases loaded, combined with the back-to-back innings in the third and fourth of game two in which they had the bases loaded. The fact that they could not score a run with the bases loaded, because remember, the Bo Bichette RBI single didn't come with the bases loaded. It came two batters prior to the bases being loaded. They couldn't score a run. And so, again, it's laughing. It's either laughing or crying or shutting the TV off. Those are your three options at this point in the Mets season. But so many good opportunities they come up small in, and you know, take your pick on who you want to rip. Jared Young comes up with the bases loaded in the third, Benj in the fourth inning. Soto came up with a leadoff man on in the fifth, and he struck out. I can't kill him for the walk in the third that loaded the bases for Jared Young. I know some will, thinking he needs to expand the strikes on and not look for a walk. I will not mind Juan Soto drawing walks. Problem is, you need guys around him to come through, which we didn't see in this game. And this turned into a very frustrating game, because they get the one run in the third inning on the Bichette RBI single. They fail to take advantage of opportunities in the fourth inning. And then even in the fifth inning with the leadoff man on, eventually Jared Young bounces into a double play. And then of all people, Mark Vientos hits the two-run home run in the sixth that at least makes it close. And at 5-3 with nine outs to work with, it's like, all right, they got a shot. Now, I'll tell you something weird about this game. I'm not sure if it's just everything over the last few days. I think this is the first time this season this happened to me. In the seventh inning of a 5-3 game, I started to feel my eyes closing. I started, like, my eyes were heavy as all hell. And I'm like, I'm live on this game, so I'm not on DVR. I can't skip around. And I'm starting to think to myself, I'm not getting through this game. I think I'm going to fall asleep, and I can't have that happen. So I actually paused the game and went to bed, woke up at 1 a.m. and finished the last three innings at 1 o'clock in the morning. That would have been a weird Rico if the Mets had come back and won, because you wouldn't have gotten one. And then at 1 a.m., I think I would have texted Pete and said, are you still up? But here's what's crazy about this team. Actually, that's the wrong phrasing. It's not, here's what's crazy about this team. Here's the reality of this team. They weren't going to come back. I know they've had a couple of those this year. You think of the Yankee game, that great comeback with Tyrone Taylor hitting the home run. They're not coming back. And this was a game that they could have come back in. This would have been a really good win. This would have been one of those wins that you say, okay, they really can turn this season around. You're down 4-0 early. You're down 5-1 in the sixth, and you cut into it, and then you come back. And after Vientos hit the two-run home run, A.J. Ewing came up with a guy on base in the seventh. That's where my eyes were getting very heavy. He grounds out. But the eighth inning was the biggest disaster. Two on and nobody out. And here's Vientos again, and he could not be magical again. This time he struck out. Alvarez struck out in what was just a pathetic at-bat. And then Carson Bench grounded out. And truthfully about Carson Bench, going into the finale of this series where he ended up with the triple, and he ended up making, there was one good defensive play he made. Bench was like my favorite for the net negative. He was bad in the series. And you know, we'll get to it, and maybe he will get a vote or two for net negative. But he took an 0 for 5 in this game, and a lot of those at-bats came in big spots. Like the leadoff spot found Carson Bench in game two of this series. You go back to the third inning, two on, one out, fly ball to left field. Following inning, bases loaded, two out, fly ball to right field. Right after the Vientos home run, right after it, Sam Moll walks Francisco Alvarez, and Carson Bench strikes out. So it wasn't with a guy in scoring position, but the momentum on the Mets side, he strikes out, two on, two out in the eighth, and he grounds out. So if my math is correct, I think he left eight guys on base, which is tough to do when you're the leadoff hitter. But that was the story of game two. It's Kodai Senga sucked, yes. Four innings, two runs, still not good enough. I give him credit for settling down, but those four runs in the first inning count, and the offense just continued to be bad.
There's never been a better time to get outside and experience the benefits of nature. Discover nearby trails and explore the outdoors with AllTrails. Download the free app today and find your outside.
When the stakes rise and the lights get bright, that's when you find out who can really swim. Deep Waters is a new UFC podcast from CBS Sports. Every Monday, myself, Dean Thomas, alongside with legends of the sport, Chris Weidman, Jorge Masvidal, and Dustin Poirier, bring you inside the octagon like no one else can. Deep Waters, new episodes every Monday. Watch on YouTube or listen on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get podcasts.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Summer routines live or die by how easy they are. And honestly, if something takes too much effort, I'm out. That's why Grunes is my go-to. It's one daily pack of gummies covering my greens, vitamins, and minerals. Plus, it has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber, which is more than 2 cups of broccoli. No mixing powders, no giant pills, no hassle. Just rip open the pack and I'm done. They taste good and it makes it easy to stay on top of my health, even when life gets busy. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grunes.co. That's code PODCAST at Grunes.co.
Now, the other issue in game two, and I'm going to try to remain calm because Gary Cohen wasn't calm, and good for him. The Mets' usage of challenges is so bad and so sad and so disorganized. It is yet another example, and I feel bad saying it, but I got to be honest. It's another example that this coaching staff from top to bottom is abysmal. You know, David Stearns could sit there all he wants and tell us, I like the coaching staff. I don't know what it would be based on. Now, if it's something we don't see, okay. Well, I'll tell you what we do see. Here's what we see. We see a stupid team. We see a team that has zero plan when it comes to ABS challenges. We see a pitching staff that's gone completely backwards from the days of Jeremy Hefner. We see pitch selections that at time make absolutely no sense. We see base running decisions from coaches that you don't agree with. And then sometimes you got guys just running through stop signs, like we saw in the finale of the series. But let's focus on the ABS stuff. Do they have meetings? Do they have discussions? And I don't want to hear from this manager about, well, they're competitive. You are the boss. You are the manager. You make it perfectly clear to Marcus Semien that in the first or second inning, don't make a selfish, dumbass challenge. Simple. This has got to stop. The Mets losing challenges, both of them, by the second inning is a fireable offense. So I don't know if David Stearns is paying attention half the time or if he's too busy trying to convince us. No, this coaching staff is great. I don't know what you guys are looking at. This is amazing. Amazing. Do they meet about ABS challenges? Do they? Do they meet about defensive positioning? How many times have we seen guys in positions where you're like, that don't make any sense either? The reality of this team, and we're almost at the halfway point, so I feel comfortable saying this, they're a dumb baseball team, and they're dumb from top to bottom. That is not just a player thing. That's a coach's thing. That's an everything thing. They're dumb. I'm sorry. I chuckle about it, and I'm not trying to tell you I'm much smarter, but guess what? I'm not a major league coach, nor am I a major league player. We're just the dumbasses watching it every day. That's who we are. So the challenge stuff, I don't know what to say anymore. Now, we talked about this in spring training. There needs to be hard, fast rules that organizations have in terms of when it makes sense to challenge and when it doesn't. For this team to lose both challenges by the second inning, again, it's a fireable offense. What else is there to say about this game? Siono Perez gave up a run. I'm not going to hate him. Austin Warren threw a scoreless inning great. Oscar Brazoban continues to be awesome. And Luke Weaver looked incredibly dominant by striking out the side in the eighth inning. But the offense lacked a big hit. They found a way to not come through with the bases loaded. They had a few scoring opportunities late in this game in the eighth inning, a little bit in the ninth inning with the tying run at the plate with Eric Wagaman and A.J. Ewing. And they lose. I missed anything from this game, Hoff. This game pissed me off. So the challenge thing just, it rubbed me the wrong way that this early in a game, and I know a part of it was the desperation challenge when Senga was on the mound to steal a strike for him, but I don't care how desperate you are, you cannot challenge in dumbass ways. And so between the lack of big hitting, Senga being awful, and the challenges, in a lot of ways, game two of this series was like one of the bad black marks of this season.
Yeah, and what bothered me more than anything else, too.
I can't hear you. This is my fault again. I'm sorry, Pete. But talk, and the audience will hear you. That's what's most important.
What bothered me more than anything else is listening to the broadcast and listening to the post game, and basically everything being the same thing that we hear all the time. You know, Kodai Senga settled down. You know, after Vientos' home run, they got decent at bats and they almost fought back, and the bullpen kept them in the game. It's the same BS every single game. I know that Mendoza can't change his answers. I don't know what else he could say, but like, there's got to be something better than the excuses and the hey, we're battling. It's like, it's common sense has got to go in there and be like, get fiery. I know we got kicked out yesterday, but it still wasn't even enough. It wasn't even a good kick out.
Oh, good point. That was the one thing I forgot. He got thrown out of the game because of miscommunication between Carlos Torres and the Met dugout. Yippity-doo-dah. The answers suck. You're right. The answers are terrible. I think it's more we need to see improvement. That's the truth. Like, it's like talking to your kids in school. I can you show me the improvement? It feels like the team has gotten dumber as the season has gone on. Before we get to the final game of this series, let me get to those emails from game two, the RicoB@gmail.com. Scott in Jersey writes, every bleeping year is an embarrassment. You can change the owner, change the GM, change the player, and still they'll find a way to make you ashamed to be a Met fan. There's no joy in this team. The Tin Man is more heart than Soto. Vientos needs to a flux capacitor and go back and just relive his grand slam in the 24 NLCS because Lord knows he's disappeared like Marty's siblings. I can't read the rest of this email. There's a lot of viciousness in this email. I think I did that to make us all laugh. Justin writes, good evening, Evan. I'm writing this after the Game 2 loss, and this loss has really cemented to me that the season may officially be over. The wild card is our only chance, and so far, we now have lost the season tiebreakers to the Reds, the Cardinals, the Diamondbacks, and the Rockies. We have our final series against the Cubs next week, who's already swept us, and let's be real, we're not sweeping them back, so add the Cubs to the list. That's already five teams in the wild card contention that have an edge over us, and I don't think any sort of miracle run can save us now. We would only be so lucky for the tiebreakers to matter. You're right. I am not disagreeing with you. Any longtime Rico listener knows I'm very big on these tiebreakers, but I think where they stand right now at eight games under 500, tiebreakers? What's that going to mean? Doug writes, Evan, I'm a fellow Etz fan here. Ah, always love to hear that. There's no benefit to keeping Senga in this rotation. How many chances is he going to get? 2023 Senga is gone and never coming back for reasons we may never know. I could be mistaken, but didn't you say on the Monday night, Rico, that Jack Weininger would have been set to start Tuesday if they called him up? He would have been a better chance to win. We're done with Senga. Enough is enough. I don't think they're done with Senga for a couple of reasons. Number one being the alternatives. I don't think they believe Jack Weininger is ready. And what they don't want to do, and I don't blame them for this, is to rush guys based on needs. It's not the best approach. It's what they did last year in a lot of ways with Jonah Tong. So I think with young players, and I assume Weininger kind of fits this, they just don't think he's ready. Now, that hasn't stopped the Mets from rushing guys before. So if they don't think he's ready, and Zach Thornton hasn't pitched all that well in the minors, and Jonah Tong is back in the minors, their thought, and I don't fully disagree with it, because desperate times call for desperate measures, is to just hope that Kodai Senga can be decent. And I know hope is not a strategy, but if you were recalling Jonah Tong or calling up Jack Weininger, it would be hope too. It would be the same kind of strategy. So right now, I think the problem that they run into is they just don't have a lot of options. Is Senga's contract a factor? Probably. You pay a guy a lot of money, you just don't want to get rid of him until you know for sure that that guy is done. Scott writes, it really is a first guess, but I wasn't near my computer to email. Why are we hitting Eric Wagaman for Jared Young down two with two outs when the spot is guaranteed to come up again against the righty? Down one maybe since Wagaman has some pop. But I didn't like it down two with two out, and lo and behold, it came back to bite us. All right, so let's go back to the situation. We'll break it down. Brock Burke, the left-hander, the second of three lefties, is in the game. There's two outs and nobody on. Jared Young is up, and Mendoza decides to go to Wagaman. Scott's point is, great, he gets a hit, which he did, and it gives you a chance, but there's two outs, and you know two innings later that it's not going to be Caleb Ferguson in this game. It's going to be a righty. And now instead of Jared Young being in that spot, you have Eric Wagaman. I'll tell you why I disagree with you, Scott. It is the seventh inning. It is a 5-3 game. Rallies can happen with two outs. And you can't take for granted that when that spot comes up in the ninth inning, it's still a two-run game. You could be down by five by that point. So I think sometimes when you get to the late innings, and I include the seventh inning in the late innings, you got to take your shot. And the truth is, Wagaman came through. He came through with a base hit. The problem was, the next hitter was A.J. Ewing, and he didn't come through. Billy writes, Mets are down 5-3 in the top of the eighth inning. They get back-to-back walks to start the inning. That's true. Simeon and Beatty. I got a little excited, but then I realized that Mark Vientos and Francisco Alvarez were up, and I very loudly said, ugh. Back-to-back strikeouts actually surprised me. I was expecting a strikeout, then a double play. Alvarez, Vientos, and Beatty are all bad hitters. The Mets are going nowhere with those three. The baby Mets have all been massive disappointments. The Mets are better with Torrens. Obviously, Alvarez is a more dangerous hitter, but he's been terribly unclutch, and Torrens is much better defensively. Here's to a ninth inning comeback. Not. To follow that, Michael writes, if I have to watch either Mark Vientos or Francisco Alvarez wave at a sweeper 2 feet off the strike zone again, I might just lose my mind. Neither should be allowed to face a righty in a high leverage situation, period. Well, I think with Vientos, you're starting to see that. Now, when you use your kind of weapon off the bench, which is what Mendy did with Vientos in the sixth inning against Sam Moll, and he came through, he had a two-run home run, you really don't have a choice in the eighth inning. Like, you don't have another option. The Met bench did not feature a left-handed bat. So I get the sentiment, and again, if the roster was better and they had other options, I would say you're right, but they don't have other options. So when Vientos is used in the sixth inning as that right-handed bat off the bench, you're stuck with him 2 innings later. All right, let's get to the win. Got to cleanse ourselves a little bit because that's a half hour of negativity, which, I mean, I don't regret because they lost. They lost their second straight game to Cincinnati. They ensured they were losing the series. They had a horrible first inning. We just went through all of it. So no reason to be apologetic for being negative, that's for sure. But we needed a cleansing. We need a victory. And, you know, when the Mets win, which happens once in a while, you can celebrate your highlights with Mio Sparkling Sake, a true crowd pleaser. Light, bubbly, and easy to enjoy. Whether you're at Citi Field or your favorite spot, ask for Mio Sparkling Sake by name. A new tradition served chilled, imported from Japan, the official sake of Rico Bronya. Enjoy responsibly. Let me get the negatives out of the way of this game. And I know it's weird to think there would be any negatives in a game that you win 9-1. But again, we have to see through things, even in losses. Sometimes there are positives, and sometimes in wins, you can say, yes, we won 9-1, but here's a few things that I have to mention. So can I start with the ABS again? What are we doing? Marcus Semien is a veteran, and he's challenging things in the second inning. What are we doing when it comes to challenges?
Baseball is all about tradition, but every home game brings something new. Just like Mio Sparkling Sake. Crafted with time-honored Japanese brewing techniques, Mio delivers a modern twist. Slightly sweet, refreshingly effervescent, and as crisp as a perfect pitch. Whether you love sake or just want to discover something new, Mio is a crowd pleaser. Light, bubbly, and easy to enjoy. At Citi Field or at your favorite spot, ask for Mio Sparkling Sake by name. A new tradition. Served chilled. Brought to you by Takara Sake. Proud sponsors of the New York Mets and the Rico Bronya Podcast.
Are you really buying a car online on AutoTrader right now?
Really?
At a playground?
Yeah, really. Look at these listings from dealers.
Wow, your search can really get that specific.
Really?
And you just put in your info and boom, car's in your budget.
Mom needs a second, honey.
You can really have it delivered?
Really? Or I can pick it up at the dealership.
Mom! One sec, sweetie.
Mommy's buying a car.
Mommy, look!
I think your kid is walking up the slide.
Kyle, again? Really?
AutoTrader. Buy your car online. Really?
The right window treatments change everything. Your sleep, your privacy, the way every room looks and feels. At Blinds.com, we've spent 30 years making it surprisingly simple to get exactly what your home needs. We've covered over 25 million windows and have 50,000 five-star reviews to prove we deliver. Whether you DIY it or want a pro to handle everything from measure to install, we have you covered. Real design professionals, free samples, zero pressure. Right now, get up to 50% off with minimum purchase. Plus, get a free professional measure at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Ah, took a big gulp of water. I don't want to scream again. Challenges. What the hell are they doing? That's number one. Number two, Luis Torrens. I love you, Luis Torrens. I do. I gave you an A last year. Remember in the third inning, and in the third inning, it's a 0-0 game. We still have no idea where this game is going. He gets an infield hit, which is kind of incredible considering how slow he is. But chopper in front of Matt McClain, no chance to throw him out, or maybe it was Sal Stewart. It was either the third baseman or the shortstop. Gets an infield hit. They bunt Zach short. Torrens to second base. Great. Got no problem with that. And then Carson Bench hits a ground ball up the middle, and Luis Torrens doesn't know what to do. He freezes and heads back to second base. It's a mistake. He shouldn't have done it. But once he heads back to second base, and now there's going to be two outs, just stay at second base. Instead, Torrens says, oh, crap, let me get to third, now races to third base. And if it wasn't for Sal Stewart dropping the throw back from Nathaniel Lowe, Terenz would have run himself into a brutal double play. Luckily, Stewart dropped it, and that allowed Bo Bichette to walk, Juan Soto to come through with a bloop RBI hit, Marcus Semien to come through with an RBI hit, Mark Vientos to come through with an RBI hit. So if it wasn't for the Reds making a mistake on what was a dumb mistake by the Mets, again, the word dumb being used because, well, they're a dumb baseball team, they don't score any runs. So thank you to Sal Stewart, and thank you to the Reds for not taking advantage of what was a brutal base running move by Luis Terenz. Brutal. The other negative from this game, and again, I'm going to get it out of the way because there's plenty of good to talk about from the finale of this three-game series. Francisco Alvarez ran through a stop sign. It turned out not to matter. He ended up scoring anyway. He had a really good game. He had three hits in this game and got robbed of a fourth in the third inning on a diving play by Matt McClain. So Alvarez was great offensively, and he was doing that at the DH spot. But you got a guy running through the stop sign. You got very misinformed ABS challenges. And you got Luis Terenz committing a base-running blunder. Now, despite all that, Nolan McClain was brilliant. And this was really important for him because over the last few starts, really over the last month, he hasn't been the same guy. And even in his better starts, he's left a lot to be desired. He was dominant. This was the best of Nolan McClain. He retires the first seven guys he faces. Unfortunately, the third inning, which did feature a run, was set up on a bad defensive play where Zach Short made a throw to Mark Vientos that he just flat out missed, which can't happen. It was the inning that got saved by A.J. Ewing, because remember, A.J. made that great diving play with the bases jacked, and it could have been a 3-3 game, even if the game was set up or that inning was set up on a defensive miscue. Ewing made a great play on J.J. Bleda, and after that, Nolan McClain was in full control. 1-2-3-4th, 1-2-3-5th. He put himself in a little bit of trouble in the sixth, but was able to get a big out to get out of it, and then got through the seventh inning. I thought he was great. 101 pitches through seven, one unearned run, only one walk, three base hits. This was a very encouraging performance by Nolan McClain. Sometimes, like we sort of did with Senga, and we've done with McClain in the past, you look at a game and you try to convince yourself that it's going to lead to good things. This was just a flat-out dominant start. And that's needed. This rotation needed it. We all needed it. This bullpen certainly needed it, considering how overworked it's been. And if you look forward to the next 90 games of the season, or however many else we have left, I think they've now played 73 games, if you're doing the math at home, they need Nolan McClain to be really good. And that's one of many things that they need. It's not the only thing. But when you look at this rotation, the questions around the health now of Christian Scott, Shamanai has been good in a brief dose, can't trust him. Kodai Senga is making starts. David Peterson's making starts. They need Nolan McClain. It's just bottom line. He's really, really important. And so for him to go out and throw seven scoreless innings or seven unearned runs or seven innings of zero earned run baseball, however you want to phrase it, was not only important in terms of not getting swept and salvaging the final game of the series, but really important moving forward. They needed that. As far as the offense is concerned, let's start with Bo Bichette. Bo Bichette had a great series. And when you look at the three hits in game one, not his fault that nobody could drive him in. He had two more hits in game two, including the RBI single in the third inning. And he has another game in which he gets on base four times. Base hit in the first, walk in the third right before the three-run rally. He started the rally in the fifth inning. That really put the game away, the four-run inning. And then an RBI single in the eighth inning. You can't get Bo Bichette out right now. And so for all the rightfully so negative things we've said about him, I mean, we just described the way he's played. There's no feeling bad. Bo Bichette is making up for lost time. And again, very important. They need things like this. They need Nolan McClain to be really good every 5 days. Well, they need Bo Bichette to not only be the guy they paid a ton of money for, but make up for what he hasn't been so far. You know what I mean by that? if he's going to hit his career numbers this season, then he's going to have to hit out of his mind to get there, which he's doing right now. So it's not just, oh, Bo Bichette's good. It's Bo Bichette is making up for lost time. And they need that. I mean, he was great in this series. Great in this series. I also thought that when you look at the way they rallied in the third inning, that was very encouraging. You get a 1-2 infield hit by Torrens. You get the bunt, which I like with Zach Short. Forget the base running. We've already addressed it. Bichette draws a walk ahead of Soto. Soto's behind in the count. Fights went off for a bloop RBI single. Marcus Simmons gives you a long at-bat, works at 3-2, rips an RBI single. Vientos, who we've spent so much time killing, he rips an RBI single. It was nice to see the Mets really making you pay with two outs. And then you look at the fifth inning. Again, behind in the count. Bo Bichette started that rally. He's behind 1-2. Soto gets a hit. Simeon gets a hit. Vientos hits the sacrifice fly. And then really the big one was A.J. Ewing's two-run double that broke the game open. Francisco Alvarez had three hits in this game. There was a lot of good from the offense in this game against Nick Lodolo and then eventually Chris Paddock. We've seen more of that recently from the Met offense. Like, we've seen them frustrate you, as we saw in the first two games, but there have been more games like this, Sunday against Atlanta, and then clearly Wednesday against Cincinnati, where the offense just explodes and makes it easy. It's good to have an easy win. Brooks Raley and Austin Warren out of the bullpen, and a nice, neat, and tidy 9-1 victory against the Reds. Are you ready for a weird stat? I don't know what you make of it. Gary Cohen and Keith Hernandez were having a discussion about how difficult it is to sweep a series, which, okay, fine. And if you look at this Mets season, the Mets haven't done many sweeps. In fact, they've had only two sweeps this entire season. Three games against, I'm trying to see, Detroit was one of them. They got a sweep against Detroit at Citi Field and a sweep against Miami at Citi Field. That's it. Now, they've been swept a handful of times. I don't want to relive that during the long losing streak, but the Mets are on an absurd streak right now. Are you ready for this? This one is crazy to me. The Mets have now won seven consecutive final game of series. So, and those are Rico days, right? Because we always do Ricos when a series ends. We'll mix in a few others, but we always do Ricos when a series ends. They've won seven consecutive series finales dating back to what they did against the Reds at Citi Field, where they lost the first two games and won the finale. And if you want to go back further than that, they've won 10 out of their last 11 series finales. Hoff, you've got an interesting brain. What does that mean? Is that a coincidence, or are they like more focused when it's the last game of a series?
I think the other team, it's a throwaway day. It's one of those things where it's like, we got to get out of here. The other team's not ready to play, and it gives the Mets the best opportunity to win. That's when they play their best baseballs, when the opposition wants to get out of there. That's what it comes down to.
So it's nothing they're doing well.
No. No.
You don't think it's desperate, like, oh, we got to get a game. We got to get a game. We got to have Evan and Pepe somewhat optimistic on the Rico. It's a weird one. I think it's probably more of an anomaly than anything else. Maybe I'll give you this, because not all of these are salvages. You know, this is a salvage game where the Mets salvage the end of a series, but the Atlanta game was a rubber game. The St. Louis game was a salvage game. The San Diego game was a rubber game. The Seattle game was a salvage game. Miami was a sweep, going for the sweep, which they got. Cincinnati was salvage. Yeah, so I guess a lot of them are salvages, now that I look at it. One, two, three, yeah, four of the seven are salvages. So it may be the team's like, ah, we won the series. We take our foot off the gas, which I know sounds weird for athletes to do, but it is a 162-game season, so it's not nuts. But either way, the Mets are winning these final games of series. Obviously, it's not enough. They are not chipping away at all in terms of this deficit they've created. This is like an NBA game. I'll make the NBA analogy, in which you're down early. And as the game continues, you kind of remain down between 6 and 10 points. So you're not out of it. You're not down by 30. You're not down by, it's not a blowout, but you're never breaking through. That's what this season feels like. It's an NBA game. It's game 7 Nets Bulls in 2013. That's the comp I needed to use. 2012, actually. Whatever that year was against the Bulls that they lost in 7. 2013. Yeah, it was 2013. I got that right the first time. First year in Brooklyn, actually, believe it or not. They were just always losing, and they never came back. And that's what this Mets season feels like, where they're not buried. You could look at the wild card standings all day. They are not buried. But they're also not making any advancements into the holes that they're in. That's the situation that they find themselves in. Let me read some more of your emails. TheRicoB@gmail.com. This is from Adam. Adam writes, Evan, huge fan, never miss an episode. Appreciate it. What bothers me even more than how bad this season is how David Stearns has destroyed this team for seasons to come. The main piece we needed to fix this year was pitching. We were 10th in offense, and even though we didn't have a great ninth inning comeback stat, we had a solid offense. A few depth starters would have changed everything. Now we go into next season without a first baseman, an aging second baseman, no third baseman because Bo Bichette's going to opt out, no reliable catcher, and only Nolan McClain as a reliable pitcher. Holmes and Peralta, who ain't that good anyway, will be gone. So now we go into next season with no infield, subpar offense, and barely any starting pitching. Stearns did years of damage with his moves this year, but I'll still watch every game. Thanks for keeping the faith. This is from Barry. Barry writes, Dear Evan, while watching the finale of this series, I thought to myself, it's nice that the Mets have been winning about every other game. Bo Bichette is hitting, finally. Soto continues to hit as well. And Ewing and Benj are fun to watch in the outfield. Can we really ask for more? Owen McClain is pitching well, and there was a parade for Freddy Peralta. That means he pitched six innings. Can we ask for more? Yeah, we can ask for freaking more. I mean, you mentioned some good positives, but yeah, how about winning series on a consistent basis? How about instead of being 8 games under 500, being 4 games under 500 by this point? Jimmy writes, Nolan McClain just struck out Novelli Marte on a 3-2 pitch, making it 2 out. Seemingly, McClain will get through the 7th unscathed and be done for the day. An encouraging performance and hopefully a step back to being on track. But this offense, screw them. I don't care. It proves nothing from top to bottom. I don't see one positive. All this team has shown is it can sleep for the first 18 innings of a series and then explode to avoid being swept. It's a failure even in its success. Matt writes, the 1 out of 3 Mets. Can't wait to hear Evan say there's still plenty of time for them to turn it all around. Well, there is. You know, don't get confused, Matt, or anyone else, between there being enough time to turn it around and then thinking there'll be enough time or thinking they're good enough to turn it around. Because those two things are very different. I think baseball reminds you year after year that there's always going to be a team that's like fluttering in mediocrity or worse that will turn their season around out of nowhere, make the playoffs, and maybe go on some kind of run. That happened to be us in 2024. So the time argument is true. It's more the team argument. Like, is this team capable of doing it? All right. Let's pick out Rico on the man right now and our net negative. The on the man right now, to me, Hoff, is between two people. And I can't argue either guy, though I do have a preference. I think the two positives, the two on the man right nows, are Bo Bichette, who you couldn't get out in the series, and Nolan McClain. Because when you enter the final game of a 3-game series that you need to win, it is pretty important to see that guy go out and give you 7 innings, which is so rare to see. So to me, you tell me if you disagree, it's either one of those two guys, Bo Bichette or Nolan McClain, for the I'm the man right now.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to go the offensive player a lot more, and Bo Bichette's been on fire. I mean, no one can deny it. I mean, he's been every game, he's ripping, whether it's singles, doubles. I mean, I wish he had more pop, whatever. It don't make a difference. There's nobody on base when he hits him anyway. I think Bo Bichette really has picked up the pace, and he deserves it. But I could understand why you want to make the case for Nolan McClain, because he shut down this offense, the Reds, who were destroying everybody else on the pitching staff, and he needed to step up. The Mets needed him. So I can understand that, but I'm going to lean Bo Bichette.
I agree with you. I think the answer is Bo Bichette. Here are his final numbers, just to put in perspective what he did over these 3 games. 8 for 14, 3 runs scored, 2 RBIs, 10 total bases, a .571 batting average. He was automatic. He really was. And he has been on fire for a while. He's going to win it for the second straight series. Remember, he got it in the Atlanta series, which was his second. Rico, I'm the man right now. This will be his third, which will put him just one behind Carson Benj. But right now, Bo Bichette is a monster. And the Mets have to take advantage of it. I mean, the negative is he had all those hits in game one and two, and they couldn't drive him in. I think Nolan McClain definitely deserves his proper credit for what he did. 7 scoreless innings is brilliant, and you almost appreciate it even more when you have a rotation that doesn't go deep, but it is clearly Bo Bichette. So congratulations, Bo. That's back-to-back, and I'm looking at our Rico on the man right now. We have not had a back-to-back winner. It's the first time this season we've seen it. So I haven't done this in a while, but I'm going to go very quickly on all your Rico on the man right nows for every series. So speed it up if you download the podcast. You can make this go very quickly. Pirates series, Luis Robert Jr. That cracks me up. The first Rico on the man right now is Luis Robert Jr.? Wow. That's right. He did get off to a good start. St. Louis series, Tobias Myers. Giants series, Mark Vientos. Diamondback series, Ronnie Mauricio. A's series, Freddy Peralta. Dodger series, Nolan McClain. Cubs series, MJ Melendez. Twins series, Bo Bichette. Rocky series, Carson Benj. Nat series, Juan Soto. Angel series, Mark Vientos. Rocky series, Devin Williams. Diamondback series, Nolan McClain. Tiger sweep, Carson Benj. Yankee series, Luke Weaver. Nat series, Bo Bichette. Bo Bichette's actually won it a few more times. I have to recheck my counter now. Miami series, Jonah Tong. Red series, Juan Soto. Marlins series, Marcus Simeon. Mariner series, Carson Benj. Padres series, Carson Benj. Cardinal series, Juan Soto. And now Atlanta series, Bo Bichette. And now this series, Bo Bichette. So according to my math, Bo Bichette's actually won it 4 times. So he has tied Carson Benj for the most Rico on the man right now. The net negative. I'll tell you, I thought Carson Benj was the net negative for a while because he didn't do much offensively, and it felt like the big moments kept getting to him. Like every big spot, especially in game 2 of the series, continued to find him. So Benj was a guy I was thinking about because offensively, remember, this is a team that got shut out in the opener of the series, and they had so many opportunities to score runs. Brett Beatty was miserable in game 1 of this series. And he followed that up by getting on base 3 times. And he didn't play in the 3rd game. So I think Beatty almost eliminated himself from it. But I think it has to be the pitching. And I think it comes down to either Kodai Senga, Tobias Myers. Those are the 2 guys that jump out at me because they set such horrible tones in the first 2 games of this series. Is there anybody else that you would point towards, Pete, as a net negative?
There's 2 I have. They're doozies. First of all, I'd like to elect Jared Young because he sucks again. And I just want to listen. I know he was a nice piece for a little bit, but Jared Young is going back to where he started out. He's not a good professional player. And then I have to throw Zach Short in there because why is he here? What the hell?
How do you
0 for 3?
Pete, you're being so mean. The guy started the game that they won, and he laid down a bunch of sacrifice. And you're ready to name him the net negative?
Yes. I mean, good thing they got rid of Brujan for Zach Short. I mean, that's what we had to do.
I mean, bro, Tweedledee, Tweedledum. And I when they made that decision, and I'm glad you brought it up because I haven't mentioned it yet. And we do go on the we go into the weeds here on the Rico Bronya. My reaction was, whatever. I mean, Vidal Brujan has barely played. You know, it's not like the Mets have ridden their backup shortstop. Plus, it sounds like Lindor is so close. And even Ronnie Mauricio may begin a rehab assignment. So it's a very temporary job, I think. Zach Short is a terrible answer. Jared Young's a good answer. You know, our buddy Howard, who now gives me the stats. I've started to say I'm not going to put these stats together because Howard's just going to email it to me. And this was the first time this year in which I didn't do the work. And I'm like, all right, Howard, I'll do your work. Thank you, sir. But Jared Young was 0 for 6. I mentioned Carson Benj was 2 for 15 in this series, and a lot of big moments he didn't come through. And A.J. Ewing was 1 for 11, but I thought his defense was great. I think it's Tobias Myers. Like, I keep going back and forth between Myers and Senga. And look, both guys were in similar spots to where they were called up. They were brought up and put in these tough situations to which it's like, okay, go start. Tobias Myers, you haven't thrown more than 35 pitches in a game. Go out and start. But despite the strict pitch count, he sucked from the beginning. He gives up a double. He walks Sal Stewart on 4 pitches. He allows a double steal. He gives up a home run to Suarez. I didn't love that Mendy kept in the game. Like, I would have taken him out after one. But he ends up putting up an inning and a third 7-run stat line. You talk about eliminating you from any chance of winning. Walk J.J. Bleday with the bases loaded. Senga at least settled down a little bit. So I'm leaning towards Tobias Myers as the net negative.
I'll defend Myers for one thing. Didn't the offense, I mean, the defense, weren't they pretty miserable on a couple plays that allowed the inning maybe to keep going in the first inning? I thought there was an issue with either Ewing in the outfield or...
So here's how it worked out. Blake Dunn hit a blooper to start the game that I thought Benj was going to get to. He did not for a double. But then Benj made a really good play on the next play, or the next batter, J.J. Bleday. So I think the defense kind of evened itself out. No, it wasn't the defense. He gave up a home run to Suarez. He walked the first guy he faced in the second. Like, yeah, we could kill Mendy for the fact that he kept him in the game too long. But, if it's not Tobias Myers, who do you think is the biggest negative of this series?
Well, Kodai Senga, just because the expectations are higher.
See, this is where we're going to differ on this. Yeah, you're right. Like, you're totally right about expectations. I'm looking at the series. Kodai Senga settled down for 3 innings and at least gave them a half a chance. No one's happy with a 4-inning performance by him. Like, I'm not saying it was great, but Tobias Myers gave him no shot. He really did. Now, I know Jonathan Pitaro didn't help because he's the one who came in and lit the game more on fire by giving up the grand slam to Suarez. I get all of that, but to me, it's not about expectations in the net negative. It's about who really screwed you the most. And I think it's close, but I'm going to give the edge to Tobias Myers. I'm going to overrule your ass. And I'm going to congratulate Tobias Myers. It's almost amazing to say this. You're a 2-time net negative. That's not easy to do when you spent a few months in the minor leagues.
Right, just getting called up. Weeks. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. He just got called up and he's the net negative. Congratulations to Tobias Myers. We look ahead to the Philly series. I give you a couple of thoughts. Number one, it feels like the Mets are running into a buzzsaw. Here are the Philadelphia Phillies, who have played so much better baseball since they got rid of Rob Thompson and hired Don Mattingly. And the pitching matchups are not ideal. They're going to face Aaron Nola on Thursday night. Nola's had a terrible year, so hopefully the Mets can get to him. Sean Manaea on the mound. That feels like a playoff rematch. It feels like they faced each other in the NLDS game 3, if my memory is correct. But then they've got to deal with Christopher Sanchez and Zach Wheeler on Saturday and Sunday. And, you know, unless the Met bats are going to shock us and give us a that's baseball kind of moment, you need Freddie Peralta on Saturday night on Fox to be really good. And then Sunday, I mean, God knows who's pitching Sunday. Tobias Myers and David Peterson again? That'd be my best guess. So this is going to be a really challenging series. I'd be thrilled with 2 out of 3. I don't expect 2 out of 3. I feel like if they lose on Thursday, it's going to be a sweep. And if, God forbid, they get swept, I mean, that would put them back to their low watermark of 11 games under 500. If they lose 2 out of 3, it's 9 under .500 coming home. And if, God forbid, they can win 2 out of 3, maybe we'd have like a small modicum of optimism. But it's certainly not going to be easy. Sean Manaea should start this game. It should not be an opener when you look at how much left-handed hitting Philadelphia has. So I think Manaea's also earned it with the way he's pitched. So he'll make the start on Thursday. The off day is not a bad thing. I know it's very odd to have a Friday off day. It has everything to do with the World Cup. But this bullpen's going to need it. So the bullpen is relatively rested, considering they only used Brooks Raley. And who else did they use? Brooks Raley and Austin Warren in the final game of this series. So you play the game Thursday, relatively rested bullpen, and then you get an off day of Friday to kind of reset yourself. But this is going to be tough. I mean, the Phillies are 6 games above .500. They are what we hoped we would be. When they got off to the bad start, you knew they had enough talent. They made the managerial change. They're a perfect example that even if it wasn't Rob Thompson's fault, sometimes a managerial change can help you. So it's not going to be easy going into Philadelphia. Obviously, Bo Bichette's red hot. Hopefully that continues against the team that almost signed him. And we've said it a lot about Juan Soto. He ended up getting 3 hits in the finale of this series. The first one was big. The bloop RBI single in the third, that was the first run the Mets scored. But after that, that RBI double in the eighth inning felt like a typical, that looks good, but what did it mean, RBI double? They need Juan Soto to be clutch. This weekend in Philly needs to be the two star players playing like star players. That's what they need. And maybe they get that and they win 2 out of 3 and we start to feel better about ourselves. Remember, Saturday is a Fox game and Sunday is a Peacock game. That's our first look at the Mets on the Sunday night NBC broadcast. So something to look forward to. We'll have a few Ricos, not just the series finale on Sunday. We'll try to pop in another Rico in the middle of this series. And hopefully they turn it around. What can I tell you? I can't give pep talks. I ain't doing pep talks. I'm just calling it like it is as best as I can. Great job by Pete Hoffman. We appreciate you all listening. You can always email the Rico, as you see. We try to incorporate it throughout the Rico Brilliant podcast. You can email us, thericob@gmail.com, thericob@gmail.com. Thank you very much for hanging out with us on another edition of Rico Brilliant.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Brilliant podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
As the U.S. Men's National Team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. Men's National Team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.